A recent audit of the Office of Hawaiian Affairs looked into 185 transactions conducted between 2012 and 2016. In some cases, it couldn't find documentation that work it contracted for was actually produced. OHA Chair Colette Machado said the board has instituted tighter controls, including hiring new CEO Sylvia Hussey. OHA trustee Kele'i Akina called for the audit and has been very vocal about his criticism, enough so that the board took action, saying he went against OHA's code of conduct. It's something that quite hasn't been cleared up yet, and Akina believes it's his responsibility to speak up, even if it isn't in step with the full board.
Well, the Office of Hawaiian Affairs has a code of conduct that some have interpreted to mean that a trustee cannot speak out and disagree with the board after an action has been taken. Now, that's not a very good thing because trustees are public officials. They're elected to office to represent the people and to represent ideas. And our First Amendment guarantees that. Of all places in our government, we should allow our officials to exercise First Amendment. That's the one way that they can stand up and ideas can compete against each other.
Right. And the board has this still hanging overhead, that they have this permitted interactive group that can meet, but it's still kind of a gray area at this point.
Well, the Board of Trustees of OHA used a tool called Permitted Interaction Group, which allows some trustees to meet privately and take care of a matter outside of the view of the public. And a PIG was formed, a PIG, in order to look into the complaint that I had been unloyal in my comments. And it was a process that had many problems with it. First of all, they came to a judgment and said that I had spoken in a way that wasn't truthful. And they concluded, however, that there's nothing they could do to me, that there was no discipline they could bring upon me. But the problem is they made that finding known publicly. And number one, they had never interviewed me. They'd never asked me to give my point of view. And number two, they had never told me what specifically I had said, actually, what statement in particular I'd made that wasn't true. And yet here this committee made a judgment and went public. Now, my concern is that that could cause a lot of public officials and potentially some other trustees not to speak out.
Right, it could have a chilling effect.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, a chilling effect on free speech. And it's so important for each individual trustee to be able to speak out and to represent the beneficiaries.
Now, one of the things that you have been a champion of is more transparency.
That's the irony of all of this. I had actually criticized the pace at which we were completing the audit. The board had actually authorized the expenditure for this audit back in 2017. And by midway through 2019, it still wasn't done. That's a lot of time. And during that time, a lot of things can happen. Documents can disappear, staff can leave, and so forth. The quality of the audit could be affected. Well, I was critical of that, and I went public about that. And I really believed that the board should have done more in the whole process to ensure that that audit got done in a timely way and without any interference. And so the irony is that we're looking at these audit results, which have just come out recently, and these are all from the audit that I was concerned about.
Right, and those very things were flagged, that a number of staff, you know, have left, and so there are certain things that they couldn't follow up with.
The recent audit findings took a look at 185 different contracts and financial disbursements that OHA conducted between July 2012 and June 2016. And when they looked at all of those transactions, the 185, they found that 153 of them had what we call audit observations, or 85% of them. Those were concerns that were raised by the auditors, that there could be issues with compliance or with red flags of waste, fraud, or abuse. I'm particularly concerned about 32 of them, or 17% of the audit sampling, that showed red flags for fraud, waste, and abuse. That's a fairly high amount. And the important thing is that we really have to take a look into these findings and see what was going on during that period of time.
And I know a couple of the board members have released a statement about the fact that while there were some areas that were flagged by this audit, they were saying that there weren't specific things that were brought to their attention.
The auditors brought a great deal of detail to the attention of the board. They made it clear, however, and this is the case, that they were not the ones to determine whether there was fraud or any criminality, because that wasn't their function. They weren't a criminal.
Your auditors.
That's right. What they could do, however, is give indicators. And it's so important to take a look at those indicators and see what was going on.
The board now will take this up, I guess, in January. Now that they've got this information, folks are trying to digest it and figure out, okay, what are the areas where we need to tighten up on? What are the steps that need to be taken to ensure that we don't have these areas where it's a little suspect?
That's right. The auditors identified 32 specific contracts and disbursements as what they called red flags, or transactions with indicators of potential fraud, waste, and abuse. That totals to $7.8 million. And so one of the things I did was put a report together that helped the board to understand what these issues were. The actual document of the audit is 1,100 pages. That's huge. But I produced a smaller report called Red Flags, an Analysis of the Independent Audit of OHA and its LLCs, in order to take a look at each of these 32 cases. And when we look at them, we see things that really should raise a red flag, because they show that during that period of time of 2012 to 2016, there was a lot of irregularity. And it suggests that there could be fraud, waste, or abuse.
And the concern with these LLCs is that it would then provide another filter. It would kind of shield information from the general public about what may have been going on with these companies.
Well, the audit took a look at both the OHA organization at large and its subsidiary companies called LLCs. And this was a very small sampling, however, of the LLCs, so it didn't really go very much into depth or look at most of their transactions, but it did show that there were some irregularities. The Office of Hawaiian Affairs is a public agency, and it's accountable to the general public as well as to the Hawaiian beneficiaries. It's got to be transparent. It's got to show where its money comes from and where it's going, and it has to account for every single dollar. What this recent audit shows is that there is a lot of that money that wasn't accounted for. A great deal of it has no documentation in order to show where the money went. For example, there's one contract for $2.6 million that went to an organization that helped the Office of Hawaiian Affairs to fund a Native Hawaiian election. The auditors tell us that they couldn't find basic documentation to show that all the products were delivered. And that's very serious if you can't really account for the money that goes in and is used supposedly to help the Hawaiian people.
Right, there's no paper trail to back up that it was done properly.
Right. Other examples indicate that OHA potentially misappropriated trust funds for profit businesses, and that's very egregious. In one case, OHA provided a $150,000 lease guarantee to a private firm when it defaulted on its commercial lease of property located at the Waikiki Beach Walk. And similarly, through a series of four disbursements, OHA diverted $118,000 to a for-profit entity that is currently operating a private business on Kauai. This raises a lot of questions, as well as legal questions as well. So the audit is filled with this kind of information, and the most important thing now is for beneficiaries and the public to call upon OHA to look into these matters. I do want to say that much improvement has taken place in the Office of Hawaiian Affairs since I became a trustee in 2016. In fact, the mere fact that this audit was taking place, I believe, motivated the organization to perform even more tightly in terms of procurement, in terms of finances, and so forth. So I do want to commend the organization. I don't want to say that it's going in the wrong direction at all. But there's a lot more to do. And this audit, which looked at 2012 to 2016 in a very deep way, needs to be paid attention to, because we still have to answer the question, why did all of these things happen? And who's responsible for that? And we have to hold people accountable. I'm very pleased with the new CEO that the board of directors has selected. And I feel that the process by which she was selected was a very fair one. It was competitive. It was one that did not allow trustees to intervene. And I think we've chosen someone very good who's able to help us to improve the quality of accountability at OHA. Some people ask why I'm so concerned about auditing OHA, and it's simply for this reason. There are Hawaiians who need housing and jobs and education and health care, and every dollar matters. That's why we have to take a look at OHA very carefully. In some cases, I think OHA really needs a watchdog, and that's one of the roles that we as trustees need to play.
That was OHA trustee Kaylee Akina talking about a recent audit of OHA. Now, there is still a second audit pending, one ordered by state lawmakers tied to funding. The legislative auditor is looking into the state agency's LLCs, something that Akina believes is being used to shield outside eyes from what's really going on. That audit by state auditor Les Kondo is expected before the start of the legislative session next month.